We respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia where this podcast was recorded as the first storytellers, the first communities, and the first creators of Australian culture. We pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hi there, I'm Daniel Moore, and you're listening to Season 4 of the Hearing Architecture Podcast, proudly sponsored by Brickworks. In this episode, I'm speaking with Valentina Patone, who is not a registered architect in Australia, but is the Future Ready Circular Economy Lead at WSP. Valentina is passionate about reducing waste in the built environment, and at WSP, she implements circular economy principles and strategies that help minimise the construction industry's environmental footprint. Valentina and I discuss embodied carbon literacy in Australia, some of the projects WSP is working on with a strong circular economy focus, and some of the best references architects in Australia can use to begin their circular economy journey. Let's jump in. All right. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Hearing Architecture podcast. We've got Valentina Patone here with me from WSP in New South Wales. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Dan. Thank you very much for inviting me. Happy to share.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you with us and to learn more about circular economy. So, yeah, it would be really great if we can talk a little bit about your background and what brought you into this particular theme and sort of work that WSP is doing in this area, being such a big practice. It's great to hear that they're exploring circular economy and how that impacts their projects. So do you want to start off by explaining to our listeners what brought you into this area of architecture?
Sure. I'm an architect by background, actually, so that's why I'm really pleased to be joining the conversation today. I've been working mainly in Europe as an architect for 10 years, and my focus has always been to reduce the impact of anything we design on the environment. So looking at minimizing, improving energy efficiency of our building and assets, reducing the use of water, and definitely looking into materials and waste. So the circular economy approach and its three principles that are around designing out waste, keep materials in use for as long as possible at the highest value, and returning materials to system and regenerate natural system when possible, really resonated with me and with my professional goals. Often I get asked why I've jumped from architecture and being a designer into waste, and that's mainly is my reason. I really hope shift into a circular economy approach, which is a shift not just to the way we design our assets, but also the way the whole procurement process works, and ideally the whole economy we live in works. Give me some hope for the future.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And I guess there's so many different areas of sustainable architecture that we can get into. The circular economy approach, it really does take into account a lot of the bigger items that we're talking about, especially around the conversation on carbon as well. So when it comes to, you know, existing buildings and circular economy, what are the sort of considerations that you go through as a circular economy architect when you're thinking about the value of existing buildings and when they should be maybe considered for adaptive reuse instead of knocking them down and building a new building?
Yes, that's a very good point. At this stage, particularly in Australia, we are on a journey to decarbonization, and we are mostly considering scope 1 and scope 2 emissions, so mostly related to energy efficiency and switching to renewables. Definitely the role of a circular economy in the way we design our assets and buildings and considering the opportunities related to decarbonization is very important. At the moment, particularly in Australia, we are mostly focusing on scope 1 and scope to emission reduction, which is very much related to reducing the amount of energy we use and shifting to renewable energies, which is great. Mm-hmm. But we know that based on international research, up to 45% of our emissions is related to scope 3 emissions that are mostly related with materials, and construction and demolition waste materials play a very important role. And in this context is what you said about the opportunity to understand what we can do with the existing assets, implement adaptive reuse strategies instead of demolishing and building from scratch, definitely will contribute to reducing scope 3 emissions and achieving net zero.
Because I guess that's, so much of what the architects around the world are working on, and what they're studying to do is build better buildings from the beginning. They're as low impact as possible. But there are so many buildings that have already been built that, sort of populate our cities and our towns that people are thinking about, how can they be used well? And especially if they're underutilized, how can we adapt them so that then they can be used better into the future. Here in Melbourne, we're talking a lot about some buildings in the city that are not really being rented, commercial buildings, and people thinking about how do we adapt those buildings for a better future. What do you sort of look into as a circular economy architect when you're evaluating the buildings that should stick around and be adapted for, future use? How do you evaluate that?
Sure. In terms of the advice we provide to architects and the design teams, our first step is to, understand what is the asset we are considering and what elements still have value and could be retained. We are working on a couple of projects at the moment where we are undertaking pre-demolition assessments and really trying to be on-site and understanding with at WSP, we also have a conditional assessment team. So working with them, understand what is the quality and the value of what's available on site and starting from a sort of inventory there. Mm-hmm. And an approach which we find very successful is looking at any building with the framework called the building by layers. So breaking down any building, looking at different layers of this asset, from the structure, then the skin, which is the facade, the services, interiors, fittings. And for each layer, then we can understand what can be retained, what is the benefits of retaining or going through this exercise and retaining some elements. So structure definitely has a huge impact on embodied carbon. So if we can retain but at least part of existing structure, that's definitely an easy win. Some elements like services might be a bit more complicated, and sometimes there is a bit of conflict within we want to retain and save materials and embodied carbon, but we want to upgrade and be more energy efficient. So we need to do some preliminary assessments of what are the benefits and the costs. Another important layer to look at is the interiors and fittings. So there is at the moment lots of interest on fit out particularly, and understanding what can we do with existing fit out and push the system to consider alternatives to just the fit completely an office space, for example, and start from scratch. So having this early conversation with the owners and the tenants and understanding what can be retained and reused on site or donated to other people that might still need it. So lots of aspects.
Yeah, well, I think that's fascinating that in the idea, like considering things from a circular economy point of view, it's almost like the cradle to grave or cradle to cradle consideration as well, where even if the decision is made that demolition is still the right way forward, there's still a way for the materials with their embodied carbon to be used again, and then to consider how, like what process the builders and demolition contractors should go through to then retain those materials so they can have the next life, so that they don't sort of just go into landfill, which I think is also a positive way forward.
Correct. I fully agree with that. What I like in terms of terminology is ultimately that the goal for a circular economy approach is to stop thinking about waste, but thinking about materials. So anything has a value and can be used somehow. And when we talk at the end phase of an asset or a material or a component, rather than saying end of life, just talking about end of service, which means the element as is has completed the service that was supposed to be doing, but another alternative might still be available, which is a subtle difference, but I think it's very important as a mind shift.
Absolutely. And then when it comes to professional standards in circular economy, what does that mean in terms of, I guess, architects operating in a different way to what might be their standard way of operating? How might the sort of professional standards of a circular economy, what does that mean for architects and people in the built environment?
This is a very good question, and it's still a challenge globally. So there aren't any defined standards around the circular economy. It is still very much a work in progress, which clearly points out that there are some challenges with warranty and responsibilities. In terms of regulation and guidelines, and I might introduce the circular design guidelines that has been developed for the New South Wales state governments, which I had the pleasure to co-author and contribute to that, is the first document that talks about the approach of a circular economy design for the built environment as a, in Australia as a state policy. So it is very much early days, and it is a work in progress for all stakeholders across the different stages. So when talking with architects and designers, it's challenging to be, for example, selecting new materials with take-back schemes or leasing agreements. It's very much a new space. When we talk with builders and contractors on site, again, it's very challenging because they want to be sure they minimize the risks. And even when we work on with some quantity surveyors, it's still very new in their space as well. So quantify the estimated cost for some solution is still a big unknown. And that are all barriers and challenges that specialists in circular economy like myself are very well aware, and collaboratively we need to start pushing those boundaries and continue to have a conversation with governments and policymakers to help this shift.
Yeah, no, I think that sounds very interesting in the world of all of the Australian standards that we have, but then also just globally making sure that we're learning from other countries where they're doing it really well, our ability to sort of bring together some of those different standards so that we're all making sure that we're pushing in the same direction would be definitely very helpful for everyone who wants to work in that space. So, yeah, WSP is sort of popping up as a bit of a leader in this space, and you're already working on a couple of projects that that are sort of exemplary in this space. Did you want to talk to us a little bit about some of these projects? So one of them is the Arden project. Did you want to tell us a little bit about that project and how circular economy was factored into the design of that project?
Sure. The project you mentioned is the Arden Precinct in Melbourne, which has been a fantastic opportunity for WSP and my team to showcase what a strategic approach in circular economy can deliver at the master planning phase. So our team has delivered both operational waste management strategy and a circular economy strategy that looks at opportunities to reduce the amount of construction demolition waste generated in the first place, and look at opportunities to guide the future design of the different buildings and elements as part of the precinct in line with the circular economy approach. And also very important for this project was the presence of some heritage listed buildings, which kind of forced the project team to respect those elements and have strong requirements in terms of adaptive reuse. Another very important aspect that we introduced as part of the precinct development is to allocate a dedicated space for the establishment of a circular economy hub. And where the idea of a circular economy hub is to have a place where the new community that is going to be, you know, living in this new precinct, we'll have a shared space where they can be a tool library, there can be a repair cafe, community garden, there could be, you know, secondhand shop, or just simply a space where you can drop off your cardboard boxes you've used to move in your new apartment or house and share with others. And what I really like about this concept is that definitely is trying to give a second and a third life to all materials that are not needed anymore by one person, but also foster a sense of community, provide skills that are very much needed, because nowadays to repair a product is very expensive and no one knows anymore how to do it. And really, yes, start having that social aspects that's very interesting, and even opportunities to create job opportunities, because this is really a new space, a new approach where we are heading as a community.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a pretty big project, isn't it? Because for anyone who might not know, I mean, this is, being delivered with the Victorian government. They're led by the Department of Transport and Planning, and it's hoping to create about 34,000 jobs in Melbourne. And at the end of the day, it's going to host about, 15,000 residents in this new precinct? Is that about right?
That's correct. It's a very important development for the city of Melbourne. That's why we were really pleased to be involved very early and having the support of the government in setting the right direction for the precincts. And I personally really like working on master planning and precinct, because I can see where we can really set the project in the right direction, define the right targets, and guiding the delivery and the achievement of great results. One thing I'm happy to clarify to the audience is the very important difference between two types of targets when we are talking about waste. One is waste diversion from landfill, which is very good, which means we are not sending waste to landfill, but we are mostly recycling it, which is definitely better than sending to landfill. But where we are really trying to go in is to estimate how much waste we are avoiding in the first place. So really understanding how much we are reducing through a circular economy approach of sharing and looking after our products and building materials, to not even recycle them. So recycling is part of a circular economy approach, but it's not just that. It is much more. And as architects, we have an amazing opportunity to design our building and products in a different way. So this the avoidance of generating waste across the whole life cycle is facilitated basically from the start.
Yeah. And I mean, when you're talking about a project of that scale, I mean, the impact that you can have by having all of these great initiatives built in must be huge. So what sort of calculations do you do in terms of, I guess, the carbon saving that you would have on a project of this size? How do you like put together those numbers, and what does it look like on the Arden precinct?
Yes, definitely. Understanding the benefits and quantifying them is a goal of the circular economy approach and the work we do. I have to admit it is a bit of a challenge, because there is a clear process to quantify the amount of embodied carbon saved, and that's through life cycle assessment and other tools that are well established. The challenge is when we look at the additional circular design strategy, so design for longevity, design for flexibility, design for disassembly, then it gets more complicated and very product specific, trying to estimate how much materials we are going to save if we design a facade, for example, to be easily disassembled. We are starting the journey in documenting those savings based on assumption, which I think it's great, because it is a starting point to give all stakeholders a practical result and number to discuss. But it is still very new in the industry globally. And it's part of the interesting challenges we have on projects, but definitely the direction where we are all heading.
Yeah, absolutely. And for a project of this like size and scale, 45 hectares, like right next to the centre of Melbourne in a way, it's in North Melbourne, which is not that far away. I mean, that can have a huge result. So hopefully it'll be a project that can sort of show other developers and other project teams what's actually possible on their developments as they're moving forward. And it's really great that this has been engaged through the Department of Transport and Planning, and you've been
working on this with Development Victoria. Through that process, was there a lot of work that WSP had to do to sort of, I guess, sort of teach these groups in a way what different initiatives can have the highest benefit, so that then there can be some policy changes as well along the way that can make the delivery of this process a little bit easier?
Correct. So the particularly Development Victoria, they've been amazing in embedding a circular economy approach in their projects and looking for expertise in delivering this approach. It is very much a journey for everybody, and understanding case by case where some solution might have the highest impact. That's very much the case. And in terms of sharing the advice, definitely it has been very important for our team to not only deliver the report as agreed as part of the scope, but also sharing and explaining in detail why some initiative and solutions were recommended. That's also been part of the journey, because it is very new. And it happens that, as I mentioned before, sometimes circular economy is considered as mostly recycled material and recycled contents, but there is much more to that that has a huge impact. So very pleased to start these conversations.
Yeah, and I mean, some of these inner city sites have some difficulties around them. I know that another project in Melbourne, the Fitzroy Gasworks site, that's got some contaminated area on that particular site. On the Ardent Precinct, because this is so close to the rail yards and a whole bunch of other industrial properties there, was there any contamination issues that you also needed to factor into how you were going to think about this site for the future?
So the stage of works that we were involved was at preliminary and strategic planning. So definitely we have acknowledged that in terms of adaptive reuse, particularly for the site and the soil, there would need to be specific attention in case of contaminants present. But the assessment more in detail will be part of the next stage of works. So
okay,
definitely. It's a challenge, yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's always a challenge. And I think, it's just one of those things that as long as the people who you're working with are aware of those sorts of challenges, and that's good to be, be ahead of that before or when these problems crop up when you're doing the soil testing and things. So that'll be interesting to see how that evolves over time. All right. Well, another project that you've been working on was the University of Tasmania Domain Campus. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that project?
Sure. This is another interesting project we delivered this year. And so for this project, there was a strong requirements in terms of heritage listed buildings, which forced the design team to allow for the design was strongly informed by the fact that the buildings were heritage listed. So usually with the process we undertake, we as a team, we have identified a set of design strategies that are relevant to promoting a shift to a circular economy in the built environment. And we usually undertake a preliminary assessment of which strategies are most relevant and can have a higher impact. So typically we have between 13 to 15 strategies divided by each principles of a circular economy, and we assess them by the different building layers. So, for example, as we were talking before about the potential challenge of having some contaminants in the soil, that will definitely become a potential red flag if you're looking for reusing materials from the site. But the same strategy can be applied to reusing existing structures. So it's interesting how it's a very flexible approach where each strategy can be used and updated as needed per each layer of an asset. For the University of Tasmania, in this case, definitely the top three strategies we have identified were adaptive reuse to be compliant with the requirements for heritage listed buildings, opportunities for design for disassembly of some components, including, for example, the internal insulation, which was designed as a second skin to facilitate the disassembly without affecting the heritage listed brickwork, but also thinking what will happen when maybe in 10, 15 years we need to replace the internal insulation. We want not to affect the heritage listed brickwork, but also we want to make sure that these materials are not going to landfill. And a third strategy, which was very effective, was the selection of low impact materials and looking also at materials with low embodied carbon, which was a strong requirement from the project brief. Overall, there was also an interest in acknowledging the Aboriginal people and the link to, you know, understanding the local communities in the area. That's that was also a very interesting focus. Was not delivered by WSP. There was an external consultant, but definitely an interesting learning process from that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, some of these heritage listed buildings in this campus are, you know, quite beautiful, if I'm not mistaken. There's a couple of Gothic buildings, and yeah, they were needed to be stabilized and protected. So in that process, I mean, how do you assess those sorts of buildings which are quite old and they have very strong heritage importance in the state of Tasmania? How do you sort of factor in what sort of work needs to go into those sorts of buildings that need to be protected at all cost?
Yes, that's definitely a very good point. For that project, WSP was working in partnership with the Lovell Chen architects, who are experts in this field. So the one responsible for understanding and assessing the status of the buildings and what was required to make them at the right to make them safe, sound and safe to be reused. Was interesting also the approach from Lovell Chen in looking at retaining as much as possible, but also upgrading parts of the or most of the windows to be, you know, to provide indoor comfort for the users, considering the specific weather in Tasmania. Also opportunities to add insulation to the roofing. So was a very interesting and holistic approach, where again we want to promote a circular economy approach and achieve the opportunity to design out waste and retain materials in use as much as possible. But we also want to be realistic and delivering new space that is in line with the modern needs and indoor comfort and reducing energy consumption. So it was an interesting conversation to understand the trade-off of every initiative.
Yeah, and was Tasmania a particularly difficult location to do this work in? Because, as you mentioned, with the glass, these buildings may have, you know, they may have drawn their inspiration from what was effective and working in you know, northern parts of Europe, but then maybe in Tasmania they weren't as well. First, not taken care of as well over time, but then maybe now knowing what we know about thermal efficiency, they need a lot more of the modern introductions to the building to actually work efficiently.
Correct. That's very much the case. And I find very, very fascinating trying to do our best with historical buildings and really see where we can retain what has an historical value and adding, you know, additions and new elements to be in line with the modern needs. So.
And then within Tasmania, I guess, with this particular site being used again, what's the sort of consideration around preserving green spaces versus, you know, building out certain areas where you might want to have a higher floor area to deliver more teaching spaces or to adapt older buildings, as in like put an addition onto an older building so that then it can function better in terms of some of the services that might be no longer very efficient? How do you assess, you know, using a big site like that does have quite a lot of green space and, you know, what sort of carbon sequestration there can be on that particular site, preserving the open space versus building something that makes a building more efficient?
Yes, that's a very good point. Being a university campus, there was a strong focus in retaining as much as possible of the green space and trying to upgrade the existing buildings in a way that the teaching space, for example, was more efficient and there was flexibility in how the different rooms were divided to trying to minimize any impact on the site. There was also strong attention in terms of water-sensitive urban design to really make sure that, for example, all the rainwater was captured as much as possible. In terms of the new builds, there was a minimal new builds on the sites and really aiming to preserve the green space as much as possible.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's a beautiful site looking down over Hobart. So I'm sure all of the students who attend the University of Tasmania would love to be able to use those spaces and then be able to, you know, duck out for lunch and coffees and look back at the city from that incredible vantage point. So I'm sure that they would love to preserve as much of those areas as possible. Well, it definitely sounds like there's been a lot of, you know, research that's gone into all of the knowledge that you've gathered over time. And I guess, you know, for everyone else out there who wants to learn more about circular economy design principles and information just to add into their work that they might be doing, do you want to name some of the interesting references that are popping up at the moment that you've found really, really helpful in, you know, when you've been working with architects on your projects? Do you want to tell us about a couple of those references that have been really helpful for you?
Sure. I mentioned the circular design guidelines for the built environments, which I co-authored for the New South Wales state government. Those are based on extensive international research, so are a good summary and a first step into understanding what are the key principles, what are the top 15 strategies, design strategies that architects can apply in their design, and understanding what are the interaction with the different stakeholders across the whole life cycle of an asset. So I would definitely start from there. Recently, WSP has been supporting the World Green Building Council in preparing a circularity playbook. Again, this document provides a good overview of the approach and the importance of a shift to a circular economy in the built environment, and also includes a good summary of case studies from across the globe. Mm-hmm. And the Arden Precinct has been featured in that project. We also have another very interesting project from WSP in Canada, which is the adaptive reuse of one of the oldest heritage listed buildings in Canada of a large scale, with a strong focus on retaining the existing structure, which was a steel structure, and all the benefits that come with that. The Ellen MacArthur Foundation is definitely the most important organization in terms of circular economy across a variety of topics, not just built environment, but looks into textile waste, plastics and other topics. Mm-hmm. And in Australia, the Planet Ark and the Circular Economy Hub is also a great source of information. So there's a lot of information out there to be learning from.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the circular design guidelines in New South Wales you've been working on as well, I think that sounds like a great reference for anyone who's interested in that. The World Green Building Council Circularity Playbook, yeah, it sounds like it's a really, really great reference that also has some fantastic precedents that people can look at for references for their own projects and the case studies that you mentioned. They're some of the best places to learn from. For anyone else who's interested in this, are there any other projects that you would recommend people look into to know what's possible with circular economy thinking on either big projects like precincts that you work on or other just buildings in themselves?
There is another precinct which I'm finally able to talk about, which is in New South Wales, nearby the Aerotropolis, which is named the Bradfield City Centre. Again, our team has been involved in delivering the waste management and circular economy strategy, strongly focused on, again, waste generation avoidance and sharing spaces, circular economy hubs, and how these precincts will, all the buildings that will be built as part of this precinct, we need to follow a circular economy approach in design, so facilitating design for longevity, flexibility, adaptability, even design for disassembly. That's very interesting. And the so-called first building is now under construction, so that will be a great showcase of what the circular design building in Australia looks like. Mm-hmm. Another project I'm working on at the moment is our very own WSP Sydney office fit outs, where myself and the rest of the team, we're really trying to work with all the different disciplines and making sure we are retaining and reusing as much as possible of the existing fit-outs. Very important, the conversation we're having also with the building owner and the contractor on site. So that is also a very interesting journey, and hopefully beginning of next year, we'll be able to share some results. Mm. And internationally, so not my project, but one of my favorite is the circular pavilion in the Netherlands, in Amsterdam, mm-hmm. which is one of the first fully circular building that has been designed and built. And early next year, they're even looking to disassemble it and rebuild it somewhere else. So it will be an amazing showcase of what has been designed and prepared for, how it will actually come into place.
Oh, wow. So how long has that building been in place for?
I would say probably less than 5 years, but it was planned to be like that. So it was a big pilot project, but at the real scale. So we have already some project that's very small scale that has been built to be fully disassembled. This is a medium scale project, which will be an amazing example.
Wow. We get so, excited and passionate about projects that have only been around for 30 years being demolished. The idea of a project that's been in place for 5 years being, torn down, not torn down, but being disassembled so it can be reassembled very effectively. That's a really fantastic thing for people to see, and so that they know that it's actually possible. This what crazy architects and engineers and consultants have been trying to say for years about, adaptive reuse of projects, and also just the circular economy idea of designing buildings so that they can be reused again and their materials can be reused again. So for anyone out there who's interested in circular economy design, you should definitely look into those projects. All right. Well, Valentina, thank you so much for joining us on the Hearing Architecture podcast. It's been really wonderful hearing about the projects that you've been working on at WSP. And we look forward to hearing more about the work that you're doing in the future, because it just sounds like, things are moving in a really positive direction in terms of, how we can take our buildings that are, still built in place and how we can adapt them. And also, if they have to come down, we can think about the best ways to actually do that for the environment. So thank you so much for sharing all that information. It's been really wonderful to talk to you.
This has been Hearing Architecture, proudly sponsored by Brickworks. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much to our guest, who is not a registered architect in Australia, but is the Future Ready Circular Economy Lead at WSP, Valentina Patone. Thank you so much for sharing your stories about what WSP is doing and ways architects in Australia can help minimise their impact on the environment. We can't wait to see what you do next. Our sponsor Brickworks also produce architecture podcasts hosted by Tim Ross. You can find The Art of Living, Architects Abroad and The Power of Two at brickworks.com.au or your favourite podcast platform. If you'd like to show your support, please rate, review and subscribe to Hearing Architecture in your favourite podcast app. If you want to know more about what the Australian Institute of Architects is doing to support architects and the community, please visit architecture.com.au. This is a production by the Australian Institute of Architects Emerging Architects and Graduates Network in collaboration with Open Creative Studio. The Institute production team was Madeline Jenkins and Claudia McCarthy, and the Imagine production team was Daniel Moore. This content is brought to you by the Australian Institute of Architects Emerging Architects and Graduates Network in collaboration with Open Creative Studio. This content does not take into account specific circumstances and should not be relied on in that way. This content does not constitute legal, financial, insurance, or other types of advice. You should seek independent verification or advice before relying on this content in circumstances where loss or damage may result. The Institute endeavours to publish content that is accurate at the time it is published, but does not accept responsibility for content that may or will become inaccurate over time.